and all in Jerusalem will dwell secure. Security. Something we all desire, isn't it? That basic level of security, the home, food, and clothing. And while many of us enjoy that, there are still elements of insecurity, aren't there? The insecurity that something might happen to us physically, that terror may strike in one form or another. That reality leaves us a bit insecure. And then there are threats to our identity. What can be said online about us? Or what can be stolen about us for illegal purposes? Our security can be threatened. And then there's cybersecurity. The information about us in computers that vendors use to serve us in the various disciplines. The threat to that leaves us insecure. There are other insecurities too. I'm just trying to draw some to your attention because I do believe they are God's gift. And they contain in them a great grace. For in the midst of our insecurities, there is no economic system. There is no political leader or system. There's no cultural system that's ultimately going to keep us totally secure. The only one that does is the Lord. So the natural tendency is to look up in our insecurities and say, God, I look to you. And this word from Jeremiah is, all will be secure. All will be secure. I look up, and I know of a God who came at Bethlehem and promises to come again. But as I look up, I also know a God who's already here. And where is he? Where does he dwell? It is in you and in me, friends, and in others. It's almost as if we're supposed to look up and then look out. Feels like the cross to me, doesn't it? Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, this presence of God in one another. If he's in one another, where do we look? And Jesus said, everywhere. Everywhere. But if you want to find me, go to the margins. Go to the outskirts. You'll find me there. Matthew 25. I am with the hungry. I am with the naked. I am with the lonely. With the imprisoned, with the invulnerable, with the homeless. I am there, looking up and looking out. Looking up and looking out. And if we look out far enough, friends, we'll discover something. And I got to share with you, it's something I discovered, a new discovery that I've wanted to bring to you. I think we're going to have some first responders coming. We'll just keep praying, and I think the individual's out in the gathering space, and we'll just hold her or him up in prayer. And then they turn the sirens off. But they're coming anyways. I'm glad they're here. I lost track of my thoughts here, so I've got to pull them back. A new experience I had. Two different things that happened in the same week, but opening me up to something that I knew I had to bring to you and open up to you. Friday night, earlier in the month, I was up in McGregor, Minnesota. I was with Nate and Corey. We were getting things ready for our fall retreat for our teenagers. I had checked into the place where I stay. I do not stay with the kids. I stay in another location. I was given a beautiful place on Big Sandy Lake overlooking the lake. It was just a nice place to be. But that peace was disrupted by a phone call. I was on call, so the call came from the emergency line to my cell phone. It was a single mom who said, at noon tomorrow, I'm being kicked out of my place. It's me and my child. Father, can you help me? I went, I'm 300 miles plus away. What do I do? And I called Deacon Dennis because I knew he was back home here, interrupted his dinner and shared the information with him, and we problem solved a little bit. What do we do? What do we do? What can we do immediately? Because we knew where help was on Monday morning. But how could we get this individual from here to Monday morning? I slept on a warm bed, had a delicious meal, but I was still bothered by that phone call. Because on the other end was Jesus himself, just disguised in somebody. And was I responding? Was I doing enough? A couple of days later, I was a guest of LaDonna Hoy and Joe Kohler and others at Interfaith Outreach. I was part of a discussion about what's going on in our community. And the news I heard there was disturbing, but it brought me back to that phone call Friday night. And the news that I heard was that even though the economy is good and so many of us are working and reaping the benefits of a good life, not all of us are there. That there are some who live in economic insecurity, not security. And because of what's going on in our community, many people are leaving the core city and they're moving into the suburbs. They're becoming our neighbors. They are our neighbors in one way or another. 14% of the members of our community live under the definition of economic poverty. Jobs are abundant. Unemployment is low. But for the working poor, they're not reaping the benefits of that. The entry-level jobs are all in customer service in healthcare, customer service in serving food, and serving us as we shop in various places. But the salaries at those entry levels don't meet the needs that the expenses of living bring. And what does a person do? That's the question that some of our neighbors are facing. With the rise in the economy, hard to find a house to live. Vacancy rates in homes and in apartments are at an all-time low. Now, for a landlord, that's an advantage. For a landlord, he or she can dictate who they welcome into their facility, into their house. But by contrast, there's not room for everybody. In this economic boom, some, as an investment strategy, have invested in buildings and housing, and they're raising the level of housing. What a great idea. But that always comes with a cost. Because you're businessmen and women, you know where those costs are shared. And with rents rising, some have to spend more on rent and suffer with not having enough food, maybe not buying enough medication. Or some end up living somewhere else or looking for somewhere else. And affordable housing, and we all live in affordable housing, but sustainable places to live are growing less and less. I'm just sharing you the highlights. I was so moved by that conversation. I said to LaDonna and to Jill, I said, can I share those stats with people? And they brought placards with information on it and they said, here, take this to Holy Name. And I did, and I gave it to Deacon Dennis, and you've seen that information out in the gathering space and in the Good Samaritan Center. There's more facts than time allows me to get into today. But I encourage you to stop and take a look at them. Have conversations so that you know more, because I know this about you. When you know that people are in need, you reach out. You reach out. In our insecurity, somebody's reaching out to us. In the insecurity of a medical incident, all we have to dial is three numbers on a telephone, and our first responders are here. They take care of the insecurity of a medical episode. Homeland Security is taking care of our homeland for us, men and women dedicated to keeping us safe. One of the growing places of employment is cybersecurity. Men and women who can outsmart those who try to harm us are doing that. They're taking care of us. The body of Christ, Jesus and one another is taking care of one another. That's how he planned it until it comes again. And he's planned it with those in our community who are most in need. You are the one, and I am the one. And sometimes the little things we do, the Lord can take and do marvelous things with little things. 35 years ago, a woman in our community felt a need to take care of others. It was a call inside of her. And she is a parishioner at St. Bart's, and she heard that call and began to act on it, invited others to do the same. The result is, through one lady, a community came together and said, we're going to take care of those experiencing material insecurities. We'll take care of them as the best they can. 35 years later, on County Road 101 and County Road 6 is Interfaith Outreach and Community Partners. A beautiful story, and I'm speaking of LaDonna Hoy, who's to your left, right in the front row there. And I'm so glad that she's here, that she heard the voice of the Lord, and others who have preceded, so many of us, have heard that voice of the Lord too. There's one other I want to introduce you to. A man who also heard the voice of God and acted on the voice of God. And I'm going to let him tell the story. But as a result, you see two words all over our community. Sleep out. Sleep out. One man's experience changed a community as one woman's experience changed a community. Last week, I was at the 5:30 Mass, 5 o'clock Saturday night Mass. Father Evans had Mass, and I was so pleased to be introduced to a man I can now call a friend, and a friend I'm getting to know better ways, Bob Fisher. And Bob is here. Bob, come on up. Welcome to Holy Name. I welcomed you at the 8:30 Mass, but there's so many people like me. I've been here 8 years. I grew up here, so I knew of you from my years growing up, but so many have moved into our community and are here, and they see that sleep out sign. Can you tell the backstory about it and about what the Lord was doing with you?
Well, I was introduced at the first services, someone that liked sleeping outdoors and doing that. That couldn't be much farther from the truth. I don't like the outdoors that much, and for sure don't like sleeping out in the outdoors. But I decided one November night, 23, 24 years ago, that I was going to learn how to winter camp. So I set up my tent in my backyard, and I learned a bunch of things about me. I learned that I was very claustrophobic. Zip myself up in a mummy bag, and couldn't find the zipper to get back out again. And I thought I was going to be there. That's where I was going to end up. They'd find me dead there the next morning. But about 2 o'clock in the morning, I didn't sleep a wink that night. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, I get this message. And it's like it just no voice, no nothing. But it was just a message that came across my head, said, this is a good idea what you're doing, but do something for the needy people in Wayzata. And at that point, I thought the needy people in Wayzata might be short of BMW payment, but there weren't a lot of real needy people like you were talking about. And but I came up with an idea and raised some money, brought it to LaDonna Hoy, and LaDonna listened to my ramblings for a little while and then graciously sat across from me and looked me right in the eye and said, basically, what good would a hot holiday meal, which is what I was raising money for, what good would a hot holiday meal do for a family of four that was living in their car? And I said, where? You know, and I thought, not here. And she said, yes, here. Yeah. It's a, and it happens all around. And I remember hearing that story and hearing the stories that, like, on any given night, still the same thing now, back 24 years ago, 23 years ago, 9,000 people on any given night are homeless in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah.
47% of that 9,000 people are youth below the age of 16.
Yeah.
And the average age of that youth below the age of 16 are 5 years old.
Yeah.
Believe,
a kindergartner.
Think about
preschooler.
That. It still raises the hair on my back and just gives me goosebumps. I just cannot believe. It's hard to imagine. And I've got 14 grandkids, so I know what it's like to have youth below the age of 16 and five-year-old grandchildren. And I just can't imagine looking out at the young people here and the older young people here that, you know, they could be homeless. One other little fact, and I shared that at the earlier service, but I also shared it at Give to the Max Day, and I'll finish with this, but I am a tour guide for the Minnesota Twins, so I take people around the stadium at Twin Stadium, and we have to know the amount of people that you can seat in the stadium and how many people can get in there. It can fit 38,886, I think, people. Well, a note that Interfaith just sent out a while ago is through the years of the sleepout, they have been able to prevent homelessness in 32,098 cases.
Wow.
32,098 individual cases of homelessness. Mm-hmm. That's enough to darn near fill the whole stadium that the Twins play in, Target Field.
Yeah.
You know, that's here. That's not Detroit. That's not other places. That's here in the community that Interfaith serves. And so we have an opportunity here to open people's eyes and to get them to start thinking about what's what are you, who are your neighbors, and those are your neighbors.
Yeah.
32,000 people that have been that close to homelessness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I bought a bike for health reasons. I biked our community this summer, and I asked LaDonna and Jill the same question you did, because we're so blessed materially, so many of us are. And when she raised that number of homelessness, I said, where are people? And she said, and some of them are sleeping in the homes, and some folks here have taken people in, maybe relatives, maybe friends, but you know, you wear out your welcome at some point. Some are in our shelters. Some are coming out after we're in, after my bike is tucked away and I'm tucked away. And others are other places, so huge awareness. My point this weekend is just to let you know of it in the last couple weeks, because again, you're so generous. We'll take up a second collection. There's other opportunities to do more. Bob's going to be here, LaDonna, and Dennis's outreach committee. They've got more information for you. I want to be respectful of the rest of your time. Something's going on in New England that some of you are interested in. I don't know, a football game or something, but. And others have other responsibilities for the day. Bob, thank you. Thank you for coming last week. I'm so blessed to be able to meet you in person. Yeah.